There it is, the random alternate opening for X-Men that was used in season three a couple of times.
Yeah, a handful. It's not as good.
No, it's a little bit weird, and I'm gonna be honest, maybe a little jarring because I just didn't know. I was like, wait, what? I don't remember this at all. But welcome everybody to brand new episode of Granny's Peach Tea, episode 151 for those who are counting. And yes, we are continuing our countdown to X-Men 97, which actually releases next week. Next Wednesday, the first two episodes do drop. So
you're almost there.
We are almost there, and I really can't wait.
Me neither.
But yeah, thanks. No, me neither, man. This rewatch has got me fully hyped up for this damn thing, so... not that I needed more, but it's been pretty cool to go back and rewatch the show. Cause I mean, we haven't seen it since it aired. And I think both of us are going to hit a point where we're like, wait, we probably didn't see this now because we were getting into high school and converting and to teenagers then. And it was just like, oh no, put it away. We don't need the cartoons then anymore. But yeah, thanks for joining us as always. If you're joining us on the Facebook live stream, or if you're joining us on YouTube or X or wherever you found your audio-only podcast, we appreciate the support. Yeah, we'll be talking about X-Men Season 3, as I had mentioned, and we also got some interesting comments by Zack Snyder regarding Batman. And
hey, he's got to keep relevant, right?
I guess so, because, I mean, Robo Moon didn't quite work out too well for him. But... I'm Ed, and with me as always is Jason. Jason, what is up, my man?
How's it going? Good to be here. I'm very excited for this season of X-Men, talking about this. Let me just bring on just a prelude, because I've decided I'm just going to bring a whole bunch of my X-Men action figures on until we finish our X-Men run. We got weeks of it, so I'll start us off tonight with Dark Phoenix herself, the avatar of this season. I love this one. I have her and I have regular Jean Grey both up at the same time because I think they're awesome characters and they look so different. But being who I am, God, am I in love with Dark Phoenix, right? A murderous narcissist who can never love me back. Oh, man, if that doesn't say everything about me, I don't know what else does. but yeah, so that's the first one for tonight. Excited to talk about the X-Men. I'm realizing I realized something today, Ed, while I was watching this.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of characters that everyone like hypes up and gets behind, like, yeah, they're the best, you know. For the most part, unless I was on that bandwagon first, like Batman, like I've been a Batman fan my whole life, even before he was rah 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 Batman.
Yeah,
I'm always like, I don't know, maybe it's a bit overhyped, and I was a Wolverine fan when I was younger, but then as I got older, I was like, maybe he's a bit overhyped. He's loved so much. Watching this season, I'll point it out when we get there. There are so many moments where I'm like, no, I get why he's people's favorite X-Men. He's fucking badass.
Yeah, I totally get it. And when we talked about, like, when we first started this, and you asked me who my favorite X-Men was, I excluded Wolverine because I was almost like that was a cheat code. It wasn't really
right.
Fair.
It's everyone's.
But if you want to say, I mean, I don't want to say it because it seems I'm not. It's not the exact way. I don't know how to put it, but Gambit is at least in the is kind of, has similar character traits to Wolverine.
He does
kind of loner-ish, who, like, you know. Seems like he's a little dark and mysterious and shit like that, but he's not the same character. Like, that's more or less. And he's, Gambit's also a badass, you know, in a lot of ways.
Too. Yes.
They're kind of like Gambit, the badasses with a heart.
They are. Gambit's like a rogue, right? Gambit, mm-hmm. Not rogue herself. It's like the lovable, like, you know, rogue with a heart of gold who everyone loves. And Wolverine is like the guy with the troubled past who, unless you're Jean Grey and ask him nicely, nothing can stop him from doing anything he wants. And they're very different characters, but very similar in a lot of ways. And again, the brilliance of this this run and these characters.
No, fully agreed on that. But before we get into X-Men, though, we did mention there was one topic we did want to cover and just have a discussion about, because anyone who follows know that Jason and I are pretty big Batman fans. We both, you know, really love the character, and is an interesting thing. So Zack Snyder was recently on the Joe Rogan podcast and was chatting and discussing, and they were talking about, you know, Zack Snyder's connections with the character. But let me go ahead and let's watch this together, because there's these, and we're not going to watch the whole interview, because I actually was checking it out, and it seems for like a pretty interesting interview. So it is something that I would suggest checking out if you get a chance. It's on YouTube. But let's check out the least part that we're going to discuss right now. There we go.
You know, so I tend to get in trouble because of my, I do take a deconstructivist point of view because of Dark Knight Returns, because of Watchmen. Those, if you've read those two comics, it's hard to go back, you know, to like, yeah. you want to, and it's because I care that I want to take them apart. Like, I want Batman, like, people are always like, well, Batman can't kill, right? So Batman can't kill is canon. And I'm like, okay, well, the first thing I want to do when you say that is I want to see what happens. And they go like, well, don't put him in a situation where he has to kill someone. I'm like, well, that's just like, you're protecting your God in a weird way, right? You're making your God irrelevant if he can't be in that situation. He has to now deal with that.
Yeah.
You know, if he does do that, what does that mean? What does it tell you? But does he stand up to it? Can he survive that? Right? As a God, as your God, can Batman survive that?
I never thought that that was canon, that Batman can't kill. But
well, for a lot of people, it is.
That seems ridiculous given the circumstances in which he operates.
Yeah, well,
and all the weapons.
Don't read the comments right now. Don't read the comments.
Yeah.
This is
that seems like, ridiculous.
It's well, I mean, and you know, there's this huge, like, there's so in Dark Knight Returns, there's a scene where, and I copied it kind of in Batman versus Superman, where he grabs the M60, he busts through the wall and he grabs the M60, and he's like, the guy's like, in the comic book, he's like got this kid, the mutant has this kid with a gun to his head, and he's like, I'll kill him, I swear I'll do it. And Batman says, I believe you, and he shoots him straight in the head, because it's like a no-win scenario. It's like the Kobayashi Maru of, you know, the Kobayashi Maru is that in Star Trek, it's that test they put Kirk through where there's a no win, right? Because they want to see how you'll react, right? So they say, okay, we're going to make a scenario, a test scenario where you don't win, where there's no way to win. And in that situation, we find out what you would do in a no win situation, because if you're going to be the commander of this spaceship, you're going to be in situations where, you know, it's life or death. And especially when there's no tricking it, right? There's no tricking death in this case. And the famous thing with Captain Kirk is he went and hacked the machine and made it so there was a solution.
Yeah.
And so that was his response to the no-win situation, was create a scenario where he wins, which is cool, which is a cool character, you know, that's a cool character move. But like, that's kind of how I felt. That's what they would say, don't do that to Batman.
Okay. So I let it go there too, because I figured you'd get a kick out of the Star Trek
thing. I do appreciate the Kobayashi Maru in there. I'm gonna say that before we get into this, I gotta say this: Zack Snyder is one of those rare unicorns for me where I dislike a lot of his work, and I actually find at least one of his movies unwatchable, and I have tried several times.
Which movie is that?
Sucker Punch.
I have never even tried. I've had no interest in that movie ever.
I've tried several times because conceptually it sounded interesting, but I couldn't get past. I never have gotten past the first 20 minutes. But having said that, and again, I like some of his work. Don't get me wrong. I'm not shitting on this guy. But he's a guy that, even though I don't really connect with what he does on film, I like him. Like, I was ready to go into this going, he doesn't fucking understand this character. And after hearing him, I'm like, I see where he's coming from. I don't necessarily agree, but I see where he's coming from. And that's big. That's big for me to say that.
Well, I think that's why I'm going to be honest. I initially was going to just read the quote and see where, and then throw it out there and start the discussion with that. But I figured it was interesting. It was better to play and watch and get context, because context is important, right?
Context, like, is it's everything. It's everything. Yeah. You tell me just what our banner says. Zack Snyder says Batman must kill, and I'm ready to go. Nah, he doesn't understand shit. You play me what you just played me, and I'm like, no, he understands a great deal. I just don't agree with where he wants to take the character, but that doesn't make him wrong.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm going to say is that when I first heard the thing and I went ahead and looked into it, I agreed with you. I had the first knee-jerk reaction where I was just like, he's a fucking idiot. what are we talking about now? But yeah, the deconstruction of superheroes is something we've discussed on here quite a few times, and certain films do that. Now, Zack Snyder takes that approach to pretty much, it seems like, anything. Like, he's almost just like, well, if you say this is what it is, then I'm going to deconstruct it, and I'm going to go ahead and bring that point of view to my film about this character. And I also think that's why a lot of fans were turned off by the Snyderverse.
Yeah.
Some love it, and some, I enjoyed it, right? Like, me and you both like it on different levels.
Yeah.
But I didn't mind it, because I guess I, in some ways, got where he was going with it. But again, for the general public, general consumption, maybe not the best idea. Like, it's I can see both sides of the argument here. Now,
yeah,
to say Batman must kill or he's irrelevant,
no, that's stupid. Dumb. That's stupid. Yeah.
Yes. That's where I don't hear, even within context, it's dumb, because guess what? The Dark Knight trilogy exists. And
yeah.
And that was a big sticking point in those films.
What he should have said was, Batman must be allowed to kill. And I'm even going to give him the benefit of the doubt that that is what he meant. Because, yeah, to say Batman must kill or is irrelevant, no, that's stupid. Because canonically, he doesn't. Clearly, he's not irrelevant. He was created in the 40s. Maybe early, maybe the 30s. I'm not remembering. But it doesn't matter. You get the point. Clearly, the character's not irrelevant. Clearly, people are connecting with him now when he's canonically not killed in anything but the movies, pretty much. And I don't mean the Dark Knight trilogy, but, like, you know, Michael Keaton does bomb a fucking factory with people in it. We discussed it in our Batman 89 episode.
Well, that's where I think it's interesting, right? Because Batman in film is different, right? Like, and that's a big sticking point. And again, when we covered Batman 89, the huge point, like you mentioned, the bombing of Axis Chemicals, my sticking point was at the end when he's trying to shoot the Joker and has him locked on, right? Dead to rights, and pulls the trigger and shoots a bunch of his goons, clearly with two miniguns on the side of the Batwing. Okay. So if you're telling me he doesn't kill, you're completely full of shit.
Right.
It happens.
But, like, I it does happen. I think the thing is, he's killed in certain things, and Zack Snyder is also talking about, like, a very different Batman. He's the Batman he's interested in, right? Like, it's clear he was interested in the Dark Knight Returns Batman. That is what Ben Affleck's Batman was based on. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being really fixated on that Batman. We haven't gotten a lot of him. I actually would love to jump into the multiverse where Zack Snyder was not in charge of the DCEU, but got to do cool, like, Elseworlds tales, right? Like, or got to do just a fucking interpretation of the Dark Knight Returns. But again, he's fixated on a different Batman. And to say he must kill or is irrelevant, I think is stupid. To say he must be able to kill or he becomes irrelevant, I think is intelligent. And everything Snyder said, I think he's a smart guy. Again, I really do like him as a person. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and that's what he meant.
Yeah, I also think that there's different iterations of Batman, even in the comics, that there are, like you mentioned, the Dark Knight Returns Batman, which is one of my favorite Batman as well. Right? He does kill. He clearly has killed. He was driven to that point at some point in time. And it's usually the older Batman that's the one that tends to be the one that seems to be, you know, I don't think they go out and they're a serial killer. They're not being confused with Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers or, you know, Freddy Krueger or something like that. But the point is, when push comes to shove, and Snyder mentioned this, when you're being presented with a no-win scenario, will the character kill if they have to? And in the comics, many times, Batman has conversations with the Joker and literally isn't hiding it, that he would love to, he wants to kill him, but he does not.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's why Batman's no-kill rule is interesting and doesn't make him irrelevant. Because it's like, clearly, as you said, there are times where he wants to kill the Joker. There are times, like in The Killing Joke, where he's like, it's going to happen, and I know I can't stop it, but I'm going to try. Like, it's really just this character being such... I mean, he's crazy, right? We've discussed this. Batman's a bit crazy, and he's just as crazy as his villains, but what keeps him from being them is the fact that he doesn't kill, and that's what makes it interesting. And I think when you start to put Batman in scenarios where he kills, it's very interesting because, okay, you know, whenever you set a rule and then someone has to break it, that's interesting. But you can't canonize that because then it can destroy the other stuff that comes with the interesting dynamic of Batman wanting to kill and not, or, you know, whatever he wants to as versus his code and things like that. So that's the thing. To make a blanket statement about it, I think, is kind of reductive because I think the character is so complex that there's so much to do with him that you can always keep him relevant, if that makes sense. If I wasn't babbling, because I realized I might have been babbling there.
No. I know. I'm with you, dude. I fully agree with you on that take. And I do think that the best way... I think the way the DCEU or Snyderverse is going to be remembered as almost like an Elseworlds tale.
Right.
It's kind of its own thing, and that's it. And, you know, whatever James Gunn does with it, I think, you know, with DC films is going to be its own thing. Matt Reeves is doing his own thing with Batman as well. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. And I think it's interesting because it also dives into the stuff that we've talked about in the past, where we've even said that for many years, you know, there's been one version of every character and that's it. And in the comics, those who actually read the comics and open them and read the words and the thought bubbles and everything, we know that, like, there are different iterations of characters. So there can be 10 different versions of Wolverine. It's not always the same thing.
Right.
You know, it can be. And now films have gone into that. The MCU has the multiverse saga. Sony, with their animated universe, has done, you know, across the Spider-Verse. And DC has done that, which it's just funny to me that, in some ways, that theirs isn't like an officially stamped one. But I think, and actually not I think, James Gunn did say that his Elseworlds movies, that DC movies that come out that are Elseworlds films during his run, are going to be stamped Elseworlds. Like,
okay,
fully
good.
Stamped Elseworlds. And
fucking A, they should be.
It's the question, though, is can audiences grasp it? Are they ready for it? And it's been a mixed bag because there are fans, you know, and I'll use Rick's term as calling the casuals. They have struggled with the multiverse saga, right, for the MCU. And there's some who say, oh, you know, multiverse time travel is kind of like a cheat code. Technically, there's no stakes ever. Anything could be fixed like that.
Well, it's a not comic really. Book thing, honestly. I mean,
well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, are you here for comic book stuff or not? At some point, and remember, we talked about too, is that that's where the films are right now, especially the MCU. They're doing like real deep dive comic book stuff now, and
yeah,
that's maybe on the list of things of why the MCU is kind of in a bumpy, rough patch at the moment. You know, it's just inconsistent from project to project, and people are breaking their brains trying to figure out why isn't the audience, you know, why isn't there almost billion-dollar films every single time out? Why isn't the audience supposedly eating everything up immediately? And I think it's, and we've discussed it, it's a very complicated issue, and there's not just one simple answer. I think there's a lot of reasons why, and it's not just the same reason why every single person isn't eating it up like they used to. And it could revert back. It could not. I mean, we don't know. And I think that's really interesting to see where this whole genre goes and result of that.
No, I agree. And I think, honestly, this Elseworlds, it can either be really a really good idea or a really bad idea, right? Because on one hand, as you said, it might lose the casuals. But on the other hand, we are hitting the superhero fatigue, right? And a lot of what people are complaining about are, well, I have to have seen 10 other movies to understand where we are and whatnot. And, you know, the fact that if Elseworlds is just giving people one-off comic book things that aren't tied to anything else, I think that actually could, that might rejuvenate the interest in these kind of movies and kind of, you know, get people back to the theater for it. Or it could be, like you said, like people go, I don't fucking know this. I don't want to see this. So I think really it either fails big or it wins big.
And yeah, no, I can see it. But also, though, but DC now, while not right now officially stamping it that, and we'll see this, you know, later this year with the Joker sequel, the Joker is Elseworlds. That's not within the DCU. The Batman, Matt Reeves' Batman universe, right? We're getting Penguin at some point this year. That's an Elseworlds story. That's not his main canon.
Right.
So I'm kind of fascinated about that. And if you follow the comics, DC's bread and butter is Elseworlds and multiverse shit. But Marvel's doing it more up in front and center. And this is the multiverse saga. Here it is. But DC's kind of doing it without officially labeling it right now. So it would be interesting. But yeah, the whole Batman killing or not killing, yeah, he has killed end moments, but he's not looking to end every fight with death. I think that's a good way to put it.
I agree.
Yeah, that's not going to be.
He doesn't start shit, but he finishes it.
Exactly. And yeah, I think that's probably the best way to cover it. let's go ahead and jump into X-Men the Animated Series, then total shift here, because now we're back to Fox Kids Saturday morning cartoon here from 1990. We're in 1994 right now. There is Rogue.
That's right. There is Rogue. Oh, and she's not wearing her gloves. She might touch you, Ed. She might become absorb your podcasting hosting abilities.
All right. Well, listen, season three of X-Men the Animated Series does cover some fucking heavy shit. We get the Dark Phoenix. We get the Phoenix Saga. And later on, we get the Dark Phoenix Saga. Same season.
This season is fucking crazy. This is like first season is, hey everyone, this is the X-Men. Second season is, hey everyone, the X-Men are woke. Third season is, hey guys, the X-Men also go into fucking space and do crazy shit in savage lands, and you don't know shit about the X-Men unless you watch this season, because it gets crazy.
Yeah, it does, and they touch a lot of bases, but yeah, the biggest things for me is the two sagas that we get within the same season. Yeah, they're That's the biggest thing. So let's just get through. We're going to touch on story points here and just shoot off on random details of it and stuff like that. Vague synopsis of the story arc, and then we'll just go from there. So episodes 1 and 2 are called Out of the Past. Now, the short version basically is there is a spaceship that is being tracked down by Lady Deathstrike and I was about to say Marauders, but that's definitely not their name. Here we go.
The Morlocks, right?
No. Well, the Morlocks are there, and Lady Deathstrike teams up with the Reavers to track down an alien ship, which has an energy aboard it. And Charles Xavier is, he feels this power that's in there. The ship goes ahead. It captures Lady Deathstrike, Jubilee, and the Reavers, and the X-Men are called in to go ahead and to save the day. And Charles actually joins this mission and is with them in the field, which is not something that happens all that often.
Very rare.
That's when you know shit is serious, when Charles is out there and he's the one who's conducting this whole thing. So that's kind of basically episodes 1 and 2. And Charles is feeling this energy, and this basically sets up the premise of the Dark Phoenix, the Phoenix Saga, and later the Dark Phoenix Saga as it goes on. And we find out also Lady Deathstrike is Wolverine's ex that he knew that, that he used to date. It was someone he used to date.
Yuriko.
And ironically, her father's the one who put the adamantium in him. So she later goes ahead and wants revenge on him because Logan went ahead and killed him. So it was like, okay, I'm going to get revenge for my father, and I'm going to put adamantium to myself. And she's got these fucking huge claws and stuff. And her whole thing is she's going to kill Logan one way or the other. I leave anything out in the plot there?
Yuriko! No, you didn't.
Entertaining episodes, enjoyed it. Lady Deathstrike's a pretty interesting character and stuff as well. Charles's whole thing, by the way, this really starts up the whole thing with the season where Charles's scream of pain I found to be kind of annoying and weird.
Yeah.
The same
I agree. We see it a couple times this season. I agree. These are very entertaining episodes. I actually really liked Lady Deathstrike as a character. I was really happy to see her here. That's what I really like about this show is we get all of the villains. Like, they don't have to be capital V villains. Sometimes they're Wolverine villains. Sometimes they're like nobody you've heard of. It doesn't matter. It's fun stuff. So entertaining. And I really did enjoy her. And again, Yuriko. Sorry, I don't know why I find that so funny.
I think it's great. But then after that, that ship that we referred to apparently is calling out to Charles as well. And we do find out this is when the Shi'ar becomes involved. And this is the next, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The next 5 parts. So the next 5 episodes are the Phoenix Saga. That begins. So the next episode is the sacrifice. So that's the story that most of us do know, where there is the Phoenix Force takes over Jean Grey's body in space during this mission that they have that's up in space. And Charles gets visions and sends X-Men to the spaceship launch without exactly knowing why, which I still find to be a weird thing that Charles did that. He had these visions and was like, go X-Men, like go ahead and steal this ship and go into space. But they do acknowledge within the show that it is weird that he's sending them on this fucking mission into space and to hijack a U.S. space shuttle. I'm just glad that they at least acknowledge that this is weird.
No, but that's why it worked, like, because they acknowledged it and it is weird. And we find out that, he is kind of being influenced, right? Like,
by the Lantern.
So, right. So, like, again, that's the writing of the show. I mean, for a cartoon for children, good writing, because they don't sleep on this shit. It's like, hey, X-Men, I'm the leader, and you're not going to question me, but I'm going to give you a sketchy order. The X-Men go, okay, we're going to do it. And they're going to get together alone and go, the fuck's with the bald guy? He gave us a sketchy order. But we got to do it, but what's going on? That's realistic. That actually, that points out, okay, yeah, this was planned, not accidental. So, yeah, I appreciate the eye of detail that the show has.
Yeah. So basically the whole deal is that Lilandra, she's part of the Shi'ar. She's trying to keep the Emron crystal away from her brother, who wants to become one with the crystal and basically suck the entire universe into this crystal. Like, it's pretty much catastrophic shit. To quote Peter Venkman, cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria. That's what we're trying to avoid here.
Nicely done.
So that's what's going down. I'm hyped up for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire in a few weeks. I know we talked about this offline, but
yeah. I was no. I hope you enjoy it.
So Eric the Red is a part of the Shi'ar who's basically sent to track down Lilandra because she comes through the other side of the wormhole because she's trying to find Charles Xavier, and they have this like psychic link already, and they're in love basically immediately.
Like that.
Yeah, so they go ahead and that's when Jean goes ahead to save the team from this whole thing and save everybody. So she goes ahead and she's trying to sacrifice herself. And again, the Phoenix Force shows up. The Phoenix Force is the protector of the Emron Crystal. That's its whole purpose. But it needs a host. So it gets Jean Grey as a host and Phoenix Bang is born. And we're dealing with the Phoenix Jean Grey for a little bit. There is a crazy episode in here, and by the way, she lands the damn spaceship in the East River, which also does happen. And I do appreciate the details in a Saturday morning cartoon to get that
yes
across, because there's like there is shots of like the Twin Towers in this, because again, at the time it was made, you know, that was pre-9/11, so we do see that it is painted, it's drawn home pretty hard that this is New York City, and I kind of appreciated that. But there's a weird episode in here where Charles's dark side comes out of him, his body, and is like determined to take down the X-Men.
I actually had to question, I was like, wait, when does Onslaught happen? And I know Onslaught does happen after this show, and so that's how I knew it wasn't that, but that's what this episode reminded me of. I'm like, oh shit, are they setting up Onslaught for here? And for those who have never read the comic, like, Onslaught is this indestructible villain of the X-Men that is literally Charles Xavier's dark side brought to life while he's in a coma. But yeah, I think the way they find out, well, the way that it's revealed, which I think they use this a lot in this show, where Wolverine's just like, that ain't Charles, bub, because I don't smell him.
He's right. He's 100% fucking right on this.
100%. No. Wolverine is always right. That's why he's a badass. That's why I get why people love him. Everything he says in this season is correct.
So we also get where... So Charles basically after that goes back to Muir Island, which we were introduced to last season, to go with Moira McTaggart. But then he finds out Moira McTaggart has somebody she's with now. And is not too thrilled with that.
Shacking up with Banshee. That's Banshee, right?
Yes, that is definitely Banshee. Yeah. And, so he's just like, well, I guess she's moved on. I'm basically with Lilandra now. So we're in love. Yeah. And he tells her that at some point there. But it is a cool introduction to Banshee that we get. Another member, you know, of the X-Men here traditionally. So then Gladiator apparently shows up, and the Shi'ar are pulling in like their kind of reinforcements here. And we also get the Juggernaut, who's back in this episode, because apparently Eric the Red hired the Juggernaut to go ahead and to track down the Emron Crystal for him. I'm not sure why he needed the Juggernaut, but I mean, hey, fuck it. I mean, that's a pretty badass character to get.
I'll tell you why he needed the Juggernaut. It's because he knew these fucks who hired him were going to double cross him, which they tried to. Uh-huh. And do you know what stopped them? The Juggernaut grabbing this guy and going, well, you can pay or I can crush you to bits. And this guy begs him to let him pay. That's why Eric the Red hired the Juggernaut.
And we also get Black Tom, who's in this, who's going ahead and teaming up with the Juggernaut as well. They're both trying to get paid, and Black Tom was briefly mentioned in Deadpool 2, for those who have only seen
the live action. Yeah, things. That's right. That's
He's just right. mentioned by name, like, really, not, like, in too much detail. But the Juggernaut gets literally tossed across a fucking island. And for those who have seen the epic YouTube video that's been around forever called I'm the Juggernaut Bitch, and it was that whole thing. Basically, that whole thing takes place in the Phoenix saga over the episodes we're discussing right now. You watch it, you'll see, like, okay, it's basically scene for scene. And it was hard for, I'm not going to lie, it was hard for me to get the Juggernaut Bitch video out of my head while I was watching this to get the real dialogue, because I was laughing to myself a couple of times. I still think that video is hilarious. It's so dumb and nonsensical, but still hilarious at the same time. In part 4 of the Phoenix Saga, that's when we get the Starjammers introduced. And Starjammers are basically like Shi'ar pirates that are here, and featuring one Kesar, who is, we do find out, is Scott's father. Scott and Havoc's father.
Yeah, and I actually, this was something I had remembered from when I read comics as a kid. And when I saw Corsair, I'm like, oh shit, that's Scott's dad. I wonder if they're gonna go into that in here. And like seconds after that, Jean is like, Scott, don't hurt him. And then she thinks to herself, I can't tell you that he's your father. And I'm not quite sure how she knows that, because Corsair doesn't know that. Whatever, yeah, Henry, she's the Phoenix.
I'm going to question that too, or maybe subconsciously he... Well, actually, hold on. Let's back it up for a second. She reads his mind and sees an image of a young Scott.
Okay, yeah. You're right.
And Havoc. So pretty much, I guess he didn't know that, but she recognized them. We'll go with that.
You're right. I withdrawn, Your Honor.
No, that's fine. I know you made me think about it for a second there. I will say though, why didn't Jean just tell Scott, man? Why did she have to withhold the information? He has to find out later on his own.
Plot device.
Okay,
because if he knows that Corsair's his dad, that drastically changes the end of the season.
Yes, it certainly does. So basically, the next episode is the last part of the Phoenix Saga, where the Ken, who is Lalandra's brother, who is hunting down the Emron Crystal, does get a hold of it and goes ahead, and they have this whole battle with the X-Men that they have to go ahead and fight within the crystal and take down Deken and his crew over there. Obviously, they do, but the ultimate thing is that they have to get the Emron Crystal out of reach from everybody. So Jean/Phoenix goes ahead and decides to take the damn thing into the sun and protect it so no one can get a hold of it ever again. Therefore, you know, there's a sad moment at the end of the episode where the whole team is crying because they're basically saying Jean is, you know, gone forever, they're assuming. And that is kind of that. The following episode, though, which I thought was pretty interesting, right after that, was this is one of the two Cyclops-focused episodes that Cyclops and Jean Grey are the focal points of this season. Obviously, with the Phoenix Saga's Jean Grey is Cyclops.
And Corsair and Cyclops' dad. Like, you know, it's we talked about how last couple seasons almost everyone gets their moments of origin story. This is like their origin season together.
Yes. And the whole thing does continue quite a bit, by the way, where there are certain X-Men that literally just like go to the deli and are gone, like for a couple episodes straight. Like in the beginning of this season, it was Rogue. She was one of them. Jubilee disappears for a lot of this season.
She does. but she does come back in the Savage Lands episodes, and she's yes. like, Savage Land Jubilee, bitches! She disappears for a while, but she does make an impact when she comes back.
So, yeah, I'm just saying, it is pretty consistent that words
yeah.
characters just vanish. So in episode 8, Scott leaves the team with Jean gone and goes back to the orphanage that he grew up in. And, dude, he runs into fucking Kilgrave. Who's yeah, running? Oh, who's adopting God. Children for like some murderous plan that he has?
That was insane. I don't think I knew who Kilgrave was when I first saw this episode, uh-huh. but now knowing who he is, I'm like, holy shit!
And this is the first episode that uses that opening that we had. That.
Yes.
Weird alternate X-Men opening, which I was just like, wait, what the fuck? Did they change the opening after the Phoenix Saga? But no, it reverts back randomly. And it goes back and forth a couple of times through this. And the animation in this episode is a little bit different than the ones before.
Oh, yeah. They might have been trying something different. Maybe they were... Yeah, maybe they're trying something different and they just went yeah. back on it.
By the way, Kilgrave's plan to kill Scott Summers or has his people... Just throw him in the pool. Pretty stupid.
Very
what
stupid.
What was that about? What the hell was that about?
Like, you'd expect better from such a, like, honestly, powerful, like, supervillain.
Extremely powerful. That's why I'm like, dude, you could have had Scott go and drown himself if you really wanted yeah. to.
Like, you could have just been like, hey, Scott, you know, it's a good idea. Go drown yourself. I'll see you later.
Yes.
Like, that's all he had to do.
if this were Netflix, Kilgrave, absolutely. He would have had shoot himself in half or something like that.
And also I want to point out that it's interesting that it was Kilgrave and not the Purple Man, because he's the Purple Man in the comic book, right? That's like his...
Well, he turns into the Purple Man. Well, he is the Purple Man in the episode. Remember, he puts on makeup. Kind of like the Joker
yeah.
to make himself
yeah, more you're right. human. You're right. I watch these all very, very short span of time. You're right.
If you binge these things, they definitely will start like
yeah.
merging into each other at some point. Because like I said, they're only like 19-minute episodes anyway. Next episode here, Archangel is back, and he's really, really obsessed with killing the Apocalypse. Like, that's his focal point of life. When we catch up with him.
I'm here for it, man. I get it. Mr. Worthington, you're a rich man who has been ripped off by someone who promised you immortality. And you got a raw deal. You got to work your people hard so you can kill them. I get it.
But he also gets Rogue to kind of, like, she gets it also and decides to go and team up with him. And they're going to go ahead and take down Apocalypse. There's a spaceship that Beast befriends in this episode where they hatch this plan together to turn on Apocalypse, and they end up trapping him in this like prison type thing eventually after this whole battle, and they launch his ass into fucking space.
Yeah, no, I mean, they do to him what Thor has done to the Juggernaut a ton of times. What actually the only thing you can do to unkillable beings. Is you just launch them into space. That's it. You just they did that to the Hulk too, right? Like,
yes.
Just fucking throw them into space. Someone else's problem.
But they also say, and I'm glad that they say it, they're like, he's going to be back.
Oh, yeah,
like, we know this. And even Apocalypse is like, I'm gonna be back, guys. Like, you know, this is only temporary, right?
Like, Apocalypse is like, you give me like a year, I'll be back. And the X-Men are like, fuck, give him like a year, I'll be back. We gotta. All right, well, look, we got other shit to fry. We'll get back to him, but I appreciate that.
I enjoyed it.
How many of us put off our most hated chores till the end, right?
Of course, kick it down the line. That's all.
Exactly. That's their future us to deal with.
episode 10, Longshot and Mojo are back.
Yes, yes, the apex of cartoon cinema. Cartoon.
Go ahead. You can take the reins on that one because the episode's called Longshot.
This is a great episode. Longshot comes to the X-Men and says, I don't know why I'm here, guys. I don't remember. But, you know, help me. And Mojo, and again, Mojo is a comedic character. It's very clear. This every time he's here, it's comic relief. And he's very clearly a satirical look at producers, right? I really do. I would not be surprised if this was based off, not of Harvey Weinstein necessarily, but Harvey Weinstein-like people.
Yeah.
Sleazy and his,
Hollywood producers.
Yeah, sleazy Hollywood producers, fat, you know, like unattractive, like grotesque, like, you know. And yeah, you know, like all Hollywood producers. No, I'm kidding. I don't know all of them. But I think it's hysterical that this is like, he's like, all right, someone, I forget, what's the forum woman's name? I forget her name, but he's like, go.
Spiral,
get the X-Men. And Major Domo, who I love, he's my favorite character in the whole Mojoverse, is like, well, sir, they are the X-Men. Oh, X-Men. Yes, I'll go myself. Because he's always like goading Mojo. Anyway, brilliant episode. Mojo goes to fight the X-Men, which is stupid because he sucks. He's fucking Mojo.
He doesn't care.
And the funniest part is, as Spiral and all of his people are being taken down, he goes, oh, all of my people are being taken down. I'm being defeated. This is terrible. There are no cameras here. Like, it's all about, it's so one-track minded. And that's it. And then, so, you know, the X-Men send Mojo back to his shitty universe, and he goes, and he's like, Spiral, you suck, you're terrible. Spiral, help me, come on, the X-Men are beating me now. Again, it's a comic relief episode, and I appreciate this.
It is. It's definitely very much a one-off episode that seems to happen. I'll just bump into Mojo, and it'll be the Mojo episode of the season.
Yeah, and why not? Like, again, the X-Men can be funny.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Episode 11 called Cold Comfort. Pretty awesome episode, honestly. We meet Bobby Drake, aka Iceman. We find out that he was a member of the X-Men and had this falling out with Charles Xavier and everything like that. And Cyclops really can't fucking stand this guy either. And we find out that he was with Polaris. And previously, you know, for those who are like, she's Magneto's daughter. You know, and I don't remember if they mention it in this episode or not, but
I don't think they do.
They don't. But in a lot of iterations, Polaris is Magneto's daughter, and we also meet X-Factor in this, like this version of X-Factor, with Havoc as the leader, strong guy, and everything like that. Wolfsbane.
I really appreciated that. I love the fact that we don't know what's going on. And we think that we're hunting down the bad guys. And then clearly, if you know the comics, you know that when they start fighting X-Factor, they're not the bad guys. But I like the attempt at the misdirect. Like, I really appreciated that. And the fact that they address that, like, no, they were X-Men for a long time. This is just the X-Men now. And which is the X-Men. Like, for me, that's the comics. And I guess I got into the comics in the 80s, 90s. And that's when this is made. So it's why it speaks to me. But, like, I remember when they watching this, when they introduced Bobby Drake. And I went, oh, man, it kind of fucked up. He was an X-Men before. He was one of the first. And then the very next scene is like, well, he was an X-Men before. He was one of the first. And they even had, like, the 60s outfits. And I'm like... Yeah. This show gets the assignments. Like, it really does. Like, the fact that, yeah, you've never seen Iceman. He's not part of the show, but he is part of the X-Men history, and we're not going to forget that. Again, brilliantly done.
Yeah, we talked about it last week, that this show is not an introduction. Like, this is an X-Men origin story. Like, the X-Men have existed for a while. And I agree. I'm with you. I like the fact when they acknowledge the previous iterations of the X-Men and when they run into other people. I mean, not necessarily like Colossus, but, you know, and he wasn't an original X-Men anyway. He would join the X-Men around when Storm did in the comics and what Wolverine did, which is not the OG X-Men anyway.
No, the OG X-Men are Cyclops, Jean Grey, Iceman,
Beast, and Angel.
And Angel, that's right.
That's actually the original X-Factor in the comics. Oh, it's the original really? X-Men team. It is. I'm pretty sure I still have it. I have X-Factor number one.
Wow. Okay. Because it was kind of like an answer to, we have new X-Men and we want to give the old X-Men their shot again.
Yeah, essentially.
Okay, that's cool. I like that.
But then the team does evolve over time when Cyclops and a lot of them go back to the X-Men, and then there has to be a new X-Factor. If I remember correctly, the X-Factor that we get in this was the second iteration of X-Factor.
Okay.
Okay, so then let's see. So after the X-Factor episode, whoops, sorry. I was actually using the Google episode guide, and by the way, it's way off. So if you're looking at an episode guide, do not look at the Google one because it's a shit. So I'm actually going to... The episodes are like way off and everything like that. So I actually sign into Disney Plus and use the actual one that's here instead because it's actually accurate instead of the other one.
Nice.
So episodes 12 and 13 are Savage Land, Savage Heart. We go back to the Savage Land and there's a lot of Sauron, which I know Jason was very excited for.
Oh, I was so happy. I was so excited. And guys, I did not know that Sauron changed back into a human. I didn't know anything about Sauron until this episode. This is crazy because I love that character. I always thought he was a doctor who turned himself into a dinosaur. So I turn other people into dinosaurs. No, he like has to eat people's fucking energy, and if it's a mutant, he turns into Sauron. It's crazy.
And he's encouraging, he basically in episode 12, he's encouraging Storm to use her powers and stuff like that. And that's into kind of like let free, because Storm does mention a couple of times that she has to like hold back her powers and like keep her emotions in check and everything like that. And Sauron is basically trying to get her to completely unleash and let go and everything like that. And it's basically to, you know, gain for Garrok. Garrok is a kind of like godlike creature that we get in the Savage Land, who's like this big stone head and everything like that. And he's kind of pulling the strings on a lot of shit that's going on there. And he needs to go, he fuses with the volcano that's on the Savage Land. Kesar is in this episode. They're fighting along there. They're going ahead. Wolverine and the X-Men, of course, show up to go ahead and kind of get down with them and stuff like that. So they defeat Garrok eventually. And this is when we get Savage Jubilee in this episode where she's riding a fucking dinosaur.
I love that. And she actually says, if Savage Jubilee could take down Sauron, I could do anything. And then, of course, she gets her ass kicked. But I do love Savage Jubilee in this.
By the way, one note I wanted to mention. During the Phoenix Saga, there is a random Spider-Man cameo, or at least of his hand thwipping through the thing. If you blink and you miss it. And there's also, I believe it's War Machine, is also another random cameo, and Doctor Strange.
Oh. I saw Doctor Strange.
There's just
Strange.
Flashes. There's two Doctor Strange cameos in this season.
Oh,
in
so maybe
each of the Phoenix sagas.
Maybe I'm thinking of the second one.
Episode 14 kicks off the Dark Phoenix saga. So pretty much Phoenix comes back from the sun and stuff like that. Charles is trying to do some experimenting on her, and she starts experiencing like different sensations. I'm sorry. Actually gets called back by the Inner Circle, who is the Hellfire Club.
Why couldn't they just call them the Hellfire Club? Did they not have the rights?
I'm not sure, but also they just didn't want to call them Hellfire Club because
it's
Saturday morning cartoon thing. I mean,
yeah.
That's what I'm gonna go with here.
Okay, that's fair.
So it kicks off in the first episode of the Dark Phoenix saga is called Dazzled. So we meet Dazzler, and Cyclops is seeing her in the club in the club. And
club.
So he basically, it looks like they're actually hitting it off because Jean is gone. at this point. And yes. Dazzler's all in on like getting down with Scott Summers here. But then when Phoenix shows back up, insanely obviously jealous, and like she goes on a warpath.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's hysterical because you know, she's like, oh, you're going to the club to see the girl, and Scott's like, no, no, I just gotta go do some business there. And then she shows up and Dazzler kisses him and he kisses her back.
Like, yeah, he does. He's not opposed to the idea, put it that way.
He's no, really and let's be honest. If you are a heterosexual male, you would have sex with Dazzler. Stop. Don't even deny you wouldn't. Dazzler's hot.
Uh-oh, are we going down the path again, Jason? Is this where we're going? We're going to go down the path of X-Men animated series. And
I'm not saying Dazzler in this. I'm saying Dazzler in general. It's hot. I'm not saying I'm jerking off to the X-Men here. I'm saying that a younger female, attractive female in the arts, who yes. can create lights from her hands and is a singer, that's very attractive in general.
Oh, fuck with you, because that was still such an insane talking point from the first episode of this. It was insane. all right, so basically, yeah, the inner circle is using, they're pulling Jean's strings to go ahead and garner her power and everything like that. You know, Sebastian Shaw is introduced in this. We see him, pretty cool iteration as well. They're yep. all in their full, like, I don't know, 1800s garb and stuff like that. The whole Hellfire Club. And we meet Emma Frost, Queen as well. She's having this whole, like, mental battle with Charles Xavier. And she's also the one controlling the Dark Phoenix at this time. And she catches on to it, but she's doing evil shit, and she's getting like what she calls sensations that she's never known existed. And she's getting, honestly, she's wants to experience more, and that's what turns her into the Dark Phoenix, where she's just basically mm-hmm. pure evil and wants more of it.
And then we also get Mastermind, right? Jason Wingard?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Which fun story. I actually have a very deep emotional connection to Jason Wingard, aka the Mastermind, because when the very first time I played D&D as a child, it was not D&D proper. It was an adaptation for Marvel Comics. Okay. And the character I was assigned by the DM was Mastermind. And so he's a master of illusions. So like that was my thing. I did illusions. So I actually played that character in a D&D thing. And so every time I see that character, I'm always excited. Even though he is like a Z-list. He's a Z-lister. I get it. But I don't know. Cool character. And he almost gets Dark Phoenix under his thrall. Almost. This close.
Tries to get her to kill Scott Summers also.
That was his mistake.
Yes. Because then Jean's love for Scott fights through and basically gets her to stop, but she still does want more, but she ends up eventually going back to her childhood home, and that's where the X-Men kind of like ambush her and stuff like that. And they try to get through to her, but it's not completely happening right now. But the Shi'ar get wind of this whole thing. They send Gladiator in and Landra shows up and she's like, listen, we got to fucking take her down. Like, that's it. And there's only one way to go ahead and to do this. We have to kill the entity that is Jean Grey. Like, to get rid of the Phoenix, we have to kill the host. And that causes this entire huge moral dilemma here with the X-Men, is they're just like, do we actually go through with this? Do we? And the most interesting one here is Cyclops. Because Cyclops even says out loud, for the sake of the universe, is it right? Because Jean even fights through multiple times and says to do it, to kill me. Yeah. Like, I can't stop the Phoenix here. We also get a moment where Logan is about to stab her as well, and then he ends up not doing it because she shows through and like uses trickery there. I'm sorry, go on.
No. I was gonna say, I think that really does go to show you the dynamic, the Cyclops Wolverine dynamic in the love triangle, because Cyclops tries to see things the way they are, and Wolverine can only see things the way he wants them to be, right? And so Cyclops is the one who has the moment of going, she wants this, and maybe it is the best thing, even though I'd rather die than give her up. That's not a choice. And Wolverine's the guy who's like, I see her. I see old Jean. We got to do this. We got to save her no matter what. And I think that's a really interesting, again, for a fucking Fox cartoon show in the early 90s for children. I think that's a really interesting exploration of the characters.
I agree. But you also think Scott was like, well, now if we do this, Dazzler is kind of still.
You think that's what it was? You think he was just like, I've had Jean. I haven't had Dazzler yet. It's a comic book. She ain't Uncle Ben. She'll be back.
He's like, well, you know, I could go back to that club and go talk to Dazzler, and you know, it's not the worst thing in the world, right?
You know how hard it is to have a girlfriend who can read your mind? Yeah.
Well, also though, Charles pulls a pretty slick card here. And challenge pulls this like card that says basically, hey, we can go ahead and have a battle, a duel here to decide what's going to happen here with Jean. And the team ends up fighting the Shi'ar, you know, Royal Guard and stuff for a battle of what's going to happen here. And they do fight. The X-Men go ahead. I forget where it is. They end up going to some like alternate place and stuff like that to go ahead and have their battle and duke it out with the Shi'ar Royal Guard, and the X-Men obviously win. But the Phoenix, it's basically, Jean does sacrifice herself to stop the Phoenix, yes, eventually. Now, I'm going to ask you to plug this part in for a second, but they revive Jean by all of the team. What, they make a sacrifice to rejuvenate Jean?
Who do they sacrifice?
No, they all kind of like, I guess it's a part of their essence or something like that.
Oh, right. That okay.
Brings Jean back together.
Yeah. I mean,
that was a little weird. I wasn't really on board with that.
I think I forgot about that, but yeah, as you say that, I remember them all holding hands and like, this is for Jean. It's like, I don't understand how that happens, but again, all right, X powers.
Yeah, exactly. Now this is one thing that I thought was a little bit weird, and I'm going to ding the season as a whole on this. I honestly think that the episode order of this season is weird because, number one, you should have ended on the Dark Phoenix saga. Not that episodes 18 and 19 aren't good, but they feel out of place that we went to these heights. And all of a sudden, like, we got kind of two random one-off episodes here, which also feel out of place. But they should have been at different points in the season.
I 100% agree. 100%. I thought that while I was watching this one of the last episode of my lunch break today, which is, it's a fine episode. It's actually a really good episode. It's like someone comes from Rogue's past, comes back, and it's not someone from Rogue's past.
No, what I was going to say is episode 18, though, is the one where...
18. I was going to 19. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Corsair returns. He's on a run from the Shi'ar. Basically a crooked cop there who's framing him for a crime he didn't commit and that he formed the A-Team. No, that's not what happened. How awesome would that have been? We see a van flip over in slow motion out of nowhere, and then we get like Starjammer's A-Team.
He's Hannibal. And the big green guy is obviously Mr. T. Uh-huh. And the elf-looking chick is Face.
Yes, I can see that.
I just don't know who the crazy guy is.
Oh, Murdoch?
Murdoch.
Oh, whoever the pilot was. I don't even remember who that was. Star James is the pilot. But this is a deep episode though, because during this whole thing, we only get really two X-Men for most of this. It's Cyclops and we get Storm that are kind of like teaming up in this one here. And Cyclops is like, well, he gets contacted by the Shi'ar, and the Shi'ar are kind of like, all right, X-Men, you know, you're going to help us track down this criminal here. And then we find out that it's Corsair and the Starjammers. They also show up to come help him. But then the reveal does happen where Cyclops finds out that that's his father and vice versa, because he doesn't know that's his son. And we get a deep moment there.
A very cool way he finds out too, where, because he like takes his dog tags and his locket. And Corsair's like, hey, just give me my dog tags on my locket. That's all I got on my family. And Cyclops is a dick in this episode. He's like, yeah, let me see your family. Click. Wait a minute. It's me.
That's me.
It's my brother. It's my mother. The fuck you got this for? Corsair's like, but I love Corsair's like, wait. Scott? Like, he... It's a nice moment. It's actually a great episode, but I agree with you. I wish it would have come before the Dark Phoenix stuff.
Yeah, it just feels like it's out of place. Like, this definitely should have happened during the period where between the two Phoenix sagas. Right? Yes. Like, it just feels like it should have just been, it was completely out of order here.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed.
And at the end of the episode, there's this cool moment where Corsair is going to go after he's cleared and stuff. He's going to go and he's going to leave, but Scott tells him to, he's like, dude, I have a lot to talk to you about. He's even like, hey, stay behind, not forever. I'm not suggesting we do this forever. We just have some conversations here and that's it. So they end up having the conversations and they catch up. And I'm sure that's not the last we're going to see of Corsair. And then the season finale is the one that's called Love is Vain. And that's where, Jason, you were mentioning that the boy from Rogue's past that she put in a coma shows up, like, not like Palpatine. Well, in a way, kind of like Palpatine at first. We don't really know. Somehow, he's back. Yeah. But also, Wolverine is out doing some weird meditation with no shirt on and jeans, and he runs into this, basically, these aliens that show up here, and their whole thing is that they don't procreate. They just go to different planets and take over host entities to grow their
spores on them.
Yeah, and they did that to Rogue's, you know, high school sweetheart over there, and they end up infecting the team at some point, but then, of course, Wolverine gets infected, and the healing power pushes it away. And again, Wolverine smartly tells Rogue to steal his power so she can go ahead and do that, and they end up kicking the fuck out of there.
That's the best part of that episode, where, like, Wolverine turns into the green guy and just fucking runs away.
Yeah.
And then you just see him like, no, I'll beat this. And then the healing factor kicks in and turns back into Wolverine. And then he just finds Rogue and he like takes Rogue's hands like, take my healing factor. Like, it's so much fun. And you know who really was the worst, the most angry in that episode is Gambit Chef. Because
nice.
I do not share. That's how I'm saving this for last.
Dude, favorites. That's a fucking awesome Gambit fucking action figure there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, Gambit's pretty pissed because he sees the ex-boyfriend that he's heard about all these years back in the picture, and he's not happy about that. But then also says, like, at the end, which he's right, though, to let him go. He's one of them now. And the aliens kind of hightail it out of there, and that's where the season abruptly ends.
It's a weird ending of the season. I agree with you. Both of these were good episodes. They should have been between these two. It should have ended with the Dark Phoenix saga.
Yeah. Like, the emotional weight of the Dark Phoenix saga and everything like that. And you could have, you know, semi-bookended the season with the Phoenix saga and the Dark Phoenix saga. By the way, watching this season also reminded me of what we're going to get into in a few weeks when the two failed attempts at the Phoenix saga took place in live action. Because they skipped over the Phoenix saga and just went straight to the Dark Phoenix one.
Isn't it amazing how this cartoon did such a much better job than a lot of those movies?
Yes, and I can strongly say my opinion is not going to change on this. Also, I will say that again, at this point in time, I've seen the live action movies. This is definitely influenced. The movies were influenced by this.
100%. But didn't quite do it. Everyone. No. They tried. They did try in, I think, X-Men Last Stand, as we talked about. And they did with the, you know, the last one. And they did try with the Dark Phoenix. But no, it doesn't live up to it. And I think, again, I've always been saying for the longest time that, you know, the MCU is giving us the experience of reading a comic book. And I think that's still true for live action, but this particular, like this X-Men and a lot of these cartoons, this animated series and stuff we'll talk about, I guess, later on. I think this is really the groundwork of giving people the experience of being a comic book reader without reading comic books, because this whole season and all of these seasons, and again, we can debate whether they were in the right order or not, but they tell a coherent story.
Yes.
You start with one thing, you end with another. It does what the X-Men comics did with, like, sometimes in the X-Men comics, Beast went out for coffee and didn't come back for a couple of issues, you know, like that, yeah, that happened. So this really did for me feel like I was reading a really good run of X-Men, which I think I said in the last two episodes, and I will likely say in the next episode.
Well, the first three seasons it is of this show, and I'll reiterate, if again you don't want to go ahead and read, you know, hundreds of issues of X-Men, I highly recommend watching the animated series, man, because you're going to get a lot out of it here, and it is, to this date, you know, the most comics accurate telling of the X-Men. I mean, it's all here. It's all here. All right. So I think that kind of does it, like that wraps it up for us this week then, as far as the X-Men go. Thanks for joining us as always. We always appreciate the support. We will be back next week discussing X-Men season 4. And, which, by the way, is the longest season, because that's 21 episodes.
Ooh, so Jason, wow, okay.
Jason and I have a lot of research to do.
A lot of work
week.
To do.
Yeah, we got our hands full this week. Also, Invincible comes back with the second half.
Oh, we're covering Invincible next week?
We got Invincible back. It comes out on Thursday.
Holy shit. All right, didn't realize that. Tomorrow. All right, wow, we got a lot of work to do this week.
There's a lot of stuff. We got a lot of things to watch, so... we'll be finding ways to squeeze this all in, because next week, X-Men 97 does debut. So that'll come alongside with our coverage of X-Men season 5, which is only 13 episodes. It randomly went back to 13 for the last season. Whatever. I don't know.
All right.
Yeah, exactly. Thank God for us right now, it didn't keep going up. Oh, it's 30 episodes then for the final season.
Yes. 57 episodes.
But yeah, thanks for joining us as always. If you're checking us out on Facebook, check out the Granny's Peach Tea Facebook group, as we share a lot of cool trailers and stuff like that and news stories and stuff. So always check us out there. If you're checking us out on YouTube, subscribe to Pop Culture Pros, because that's what we are presented by, Pop Culture Pros. Same as on X. You can follow at Pop Culture Pros. And also, yeah, on Facebook, which I didn't mention. Also, Pop Culture Pros. There's a lot of cool stuff going on in the network. You know, so whatever you're into, I'm sure you can find it on there as well. Yeah, so Jason and I will be back next week. We'll see you then. Peace.
Later, bub.